Welcome to Appointed.
I'm very pleased today to be welcoming to Appointed Ian Rankin. The Honorable Ian Rankin has served as a member of the Nova Scotia House of Assembly since 2013, including as the 29th Premier of Nova Scotia. You currently represent the riding of Timberley Prospect, and you serve as a House leader for the Nova Scotia Liberal Party. And the piece that, of course, I'm super excited about is after more than a decade in public service, you've led and supported so many important initiatives, from expanding renewable energy and protecting natural and ecosystems to improving access to affordable childcare. And today we're talking about your latest efforts to advance economic and social justice through the introduction of Bill 41, which proposes a pilot project for a guaranteed livable basic income in Nova Scotia. So Ian, thank you very much for being here and welcome to Appointed.
It's my pleasure to be here to talk about an important topic, and thank you, Senator, for all the work that you're doing up in Ottawa.
Well, you're very kind. It's being a public servant was a new thing to me. I had worked in the nonprofit sector for a long time, but a guaranteed livable income had been part of almost every policy initiative that I'd been involved with for about 20 years before I was appointed. And it's really what I came here to do. But I'm interested in what your vision is. How did you come to being a supporter of a guaranteed livable basic income? What's your vision for it? And what's the backdrop to this for you?
I've always thought that one of our primary objectives as public representatives is to look after those that need help the most, that have been disparaged and not found a way to thrive and have a dignified life. And with our existing systems, we have both federally, provincially, and elsewhere, we have simply failed a large number of people. And in Nova Scotia, we have some of the more higher percentages of rates of poverty and energy poverty, food insecurity, and the various metrics. And so my kind of philosophy has always been to use my voice and my privilege is to fight for those that do need that support, and because those systems have not been there. So I did put forward a bill that would I think try to push the envelope a little bit more in terms of a short-term project, because I feel like this discussion, this concept has been around for quite some time, and it seems to be stalled in terms of traction with the odd project we've seen in other provinces, PEI and Ontario, Manitoba, but to try to kick the ball forward a little bit, to try to get some attention, which I think it is a little bit, at least with you and a few others. It's that was one way I could, as an opposition member now, is to try to get the discussion on the floor of the legislature.
Great, great. And I know from my dad is from PEI, and I went to school in Nova Scotia. And certainly we see particularly high levels of inequality in lots of areas of the country, but it's, poverty is an issue and has been an issue for some time in Atlantic provinces. And you've worked in this area for a long time. Were there particular pieces that pushed you to this at this stage, or was it something who you just thought the time had come? And what do you think are the political obstacles right now to moving forward with this?
I think a lot more, I think your last point's probably the one that's the most salient in terms of our political climate. I don't see, if you're just looking at the immediate issues of your polling, you don't see poverty alleviation is typically high on the list of polling. It's cost of living now, it's healthcare and defense is climbing up there. But I think for me, I've never really led by polls or had any interest of the immediacy of political expediency. So the things that are standing out affect, and I think most people need to realize that high poverty rates impact everything related to justice issues, which I know you're very strong in, and our healthcare system and the dollars that flow into that. education, housing, it's all related to, I think, the foundation of making sure people can just live a dignified life. And I think our social security framework, as it exists today, needs reform. And I think just by looking at the key performance indicators, if you will, it's pretty clear, especially in some pockets of areas, happen to be more percentages of people of African Nova Scotian descent in our context, happen to be people from Indigenous communities. And so these systems have failed people, and we need to rethink the way that we offer public support to help lift people up. So that's where I'm coming at it from, but I'm sure across the country there's similarities in terms of where we're seeing pockets of deep poverty, and we owe it to people that we've held back, so to speak.
So tell, can you expand a bit on, how you came up with Bill C4 or Bill 41 and what it would do if it passes, and what are you seeing as the prospects of getting that through the government?
Yeah, I mean, I have to be pretty frank that I don't see this current government passing really any opposition bill, but this one is pretty impactful. So my objective with this would be for them to copy my idea and perhaps do it a different way. It doesn't need legislation, but that's one of the limited tools opposition members have through private member bills. But and I will be asking questions. This is a long game, but it's something to try to put on the discussion table. And then if the public or certain interest groups pressure for meetings with current ministers or government members to super majority, so you need some support within that caucus or it won't go anywhere. We do have a community services committee, and it's one of the limited topics we put forward. So that will be coming to the committee level at least, and we'll have experts in and government officials to answer questions, and we can talk about the benefits of having some kind of system. And I just got fed up with seeing the high percentages come out in the last the most recent numbers that I saw. And I don't want to stigmatize any specific communities, but there were some communities that are particularly up in and around my colleague's area. So I mentioned it to my one other colleague we have now, unfortunately, Derek Mumbercat. And I said, how do we help these people? And what do you think of a pilot project that is targeted at those areas to see if it's proven to work and actually could actually come in more cost effective?
And I don't know if it's the same there, but I'd be interested when I'm speaking to folks here. During the pandemic, we had 50 senators write to the Prime Minister urging a guaranteed livable basic income. And when I speak to all of the parties here on Parliament Hill, there are many, many supporters. Not necessarily their parties taking that position, but many supporters because they see what people, their constituents need. When the Ontario pilot was being launched, there were more than 400 communities came forth that wanted to be the pilot sites, even though there were only four being picked. And then I was just out in BC last week, and a number of municipalities there are pushing to have this kind of initiative. So is it similar in Nova Scotia? I mean, in my limited experience with folks that I've met with in Nova Scotia, the basic income folks and others, seems to be a lot of support. There seems to be a lot of municipal support because, of course, they see the firsthand, they experience what happens when people are struggling on the street and in poverty. And are you seeing that as well within your colleagues, whether it's opposition or those who are, in municipal and provincial politics?
Yeah, I've met with the main group in Nova Scotia, and they're doing a great job with their advocacy, but they have been having issues trying to meet with government members of the caucus. So my understanding is the NDP is still supportive of the concept, and there are municipalities that support it. There are even chambers of commerce that support it, and I think one of our challenges is to not be perceived as a big left-wing idea. Not that there's anything wrong with people that consider themselves left of center, but if we just look at it from a perspective that we all benefit, and not dissimilar to equity issues in general, I think, and it's the way we communicate progressive policy that it really is that something that we could all benefit from fiscally too. And I am a fiscally prudent person that believes in, some limited government and economic areas, but that if we can prove with evidence that something works, then why not give it a shot?
Right. Well, and in fact, one of the things that a number of federal politicians have been supportive of is we know that in every province and territory in this country, social assistance is inadequate to meet people's basic needs. We know that there are then umpteen other programs. There are hundreds of programs actually that provide financial assistance, and yet they each have their own administration and their own and therefore their own administrative costs. And so some of what we learned during the pandemic is that we could streamline and run things through whether it's Revenue Canada or some other mechanism, but that we could streamline those administrative processes and then free up those resources to actually provide additional supports to people. And we've got some examples in Canada of the Canada Child Benefit, the Guaranteed Income Supplement. We've got the Cree Hunter supplement that's provided for seasonal, Cree hunters who are seasonally working. We also have the disability benefit, inadequate as it is so far. And so it's like we keep lurching towards it, but creating yet more siloed approaches. And I'm very pleased to hear you talk about the importance of streamlining, that where we can streamline government intervention in the administration, it actually frees up more of those resources to invest in people. And so how would you see that working in Nova Scotia? If you pilot it, do you think it would put more pressure on the country to look at something that would be more generically available across the country?
Yeah, I mean, our benefit is that we are small, similar to PEI, a bit bigger, but we have that availability of, I think, a bureaucracy that could, I think, reform easier, less people to move around. But we would absolutely need to show cost savings in some areas in the streamlining that you're speaking to. And so we have an entrepreneurial spirit here in Nova Scotia. We also have a cooperative spirit in Nova Scotia. And I think, our foundations of the co-op movement and everything, I think, would show that we can find ways to pool, to work together. It's in our DNA. And I think it's possible, but we need to find a way to, I think, again, communicate it, make sure people don't think they're losing anything. But our bureaucracies provincially here, our government has grown by some 30% just in the last few years. It's growing, and federally it's grown quite a bit too. And so if you can stop the growth of public money going to people administrating various programs, and those ones that you mentioned are great programs, in absence of something more comprehensive that isn't really about doing deals with different caucuses, it gets right at I think the root of the problem is that we just need, no matter what the age of someone is, no matter if they have kids or not, that they can access. And I go back to dignity, because nobody wants to be on social assistance. That myth needs to be dispelled, that there's people that are on it and don't want to work. People want to live just to have the basic means, the basic health care, basic housing above their head, those kinds of things that in this day and age we should have. And I think ultimately we will, but people like you and others are going to be important to push to have it sooner, so we can have it in our lifetime.
Right. Well, I'm really, really pleased. I'm looking forward to seeing where Bill 41 goes. I'm hoping that our Bill S 206 also gains some traction, and that we get to see this within our well, you're younger than me, but within our lifetime. We'll see. I have no doubt we'll see both the short and the long-term benefits of this kind of approach. So I want to thank you very much for your work, for your contributions in this area in particular, but also your contributions overall. And thank you for coming on Appointed.
Well, I appreciate your time, and keep up the good fight. And as long as we stick to the evidence, I think we'll be in good shape.
That's right. And speaking of evidence, there'll be in the notes that go along with this podcast, there'll be the information about Bill 41. There'll be some background information as well as our fact sheets on that dispel some of the myths about basic income. So thank you very much. Thank you to you, the Honorable Ian Rankin, for joining us today.
Likewise, always a pleasure. Thank you, Senator.